Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Got a really cool episode lined up today. I was fortunate enough to have a chat and record a podcast with Louisa Nicola, who is a mental performance coach currently based out of New York. She's originally from Australia, and it was a really interesting chat. We also recorded the episode for her podcast as well, so there's bits and pieces about training and nutrition, which I'm sure you'll find valuable. So if you do find today's episode fun, interesting, if you could take some things away from it, please do take a screenshot of the episode. Tag myself, tag Louisa. I'll have her Instagram handle in the show notes. We'd love to get your feedback. Let's get right into today's show. Righto, guys. So as I mentioned in the intro, I'm very lucky to have the opportunity today to talk to Louisa Nicola. So Louisa, thank you so much for coming on the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast today. And I believe we're recording for your podcast too, which is cool.
Yes, we are. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited to get into a chat with you about fitness, lifestyle, brain health, mindset, everything.
Awesome. And it all ties so well, ties in so well together that I think today's chat, and that's what we're going to try and do, is just keep it as a chat, will be really informative for whoever tunes in, whether it's your audience or mine. I think people will get a lot from it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get into it.
Awesome. Well, I will fire away with the first question and get the show started. So obviously you're a mental performance coach. So for those that are listening, what is that? For someone that has no idea what a mental performance coach is, can you give us a bit of an outline of what your, I guess, job description is?
Yeah, great question. Look, I get asked that a lot because it's something that not a lot of people have heard of. And it's literally plain and simple. What we do at NeuroAthletics, that's my company. I started it 5 years ago now. What we do is we work with the brain. So cognitive enhancement, whether you're a professional athlete, whether you're a mother, a corporate employee, an entrepreneur, whoever you are, you'll come to us to help you with your cognitive abilities. And that may, you know, we have a philosophy at NeuroAthletics, and that is we get you to think faster, live longer, and perform better.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, we use cutting edge research, and not just that, in the lab that I've just started in New York City, we've got, you know, over, I would say the neurotechnology we use is there specifically to help anybody who's, you know, let's just take example, an athlete. Okay. We'll get, a soccer player in and the soccer player may be, you know, suffering from some anxiety.
Yep.
Okay. Which is a common thing amongst a lot of people, a lot of fitness people, especially a lot of elite athletes. And instead of us taking a consultative method and talking to him, we do a brain scan. We look at his brain. We take an EEG, which, you know, measures the brain waves in your brain. We look at what's firing. We look at how well he performs under pressure neurologically. And once we do what we call a neuroperformance test, we're able to come up with a 6-week training program to train his brain to overcome anxiety. And we may use different things like supplementation. We may look at his sleep patterns. We may look at his hydration. We may look at his blood work. So everything we do to make a person better is done neurologically.
That's really cool. That's, I find that really interesting. And for those that are listening, I guess I'm sure your audience has heard it before, but for those that are listening to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, although we'll refer a lot today to athletes and people in fitness, like, keep in mind that a lot of this stuff, I'm sure, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure a lot of this stuff refers to people that aren't playing sport as well. Obviously, anxiety is a massive thing that is popular or in just in general public as well.
Oh, 100%. Look, we always say that, you know, at NeuroAthletics, we say the mind is what the brain does. If you want a strong mind, you have to look, you have to go to the source. Now, what we find in 2018 is that, you know, we're getting more educated on the brain, but we're still hearing a lot of mindfulness. And I use inverted commas when I say that, because we hear the word mindfulness, mindset, and mental toughness, but we don't really know where it comes from. And we, you know, we can go out and, you know, have a great mindset. We can do some meditation. We can do some breathing exercises. We can think positively. But if we haven't got a brain that's functioning correctly and at its peak, then you're not going to have a good mindset. So awesome.
Love that.
Yeah, anybody can really come to us.
Love that. Love it.
Yeah.
So on average, how much, I don't know if this is a question that you can answer, but on average, how much of our brain are we actually utilizing each day? A normal person, how much are we actually utilizing?
That's such an interesting question, because there's this controversy going around right now about we only use 10% of the brain. Have you heard that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd had heard a few different figures thrown around, but all I knew is that it wasn't much.
No, look, I'm going to put it out there. We use 100% of our brain 100% of the time.
Okay.
Yes. Now, this whole 10% thing, it's a myth. It doesn't exist. We use all of our brain. Now, the thing is, our brain atrophies just like your muscle does. Now, it's, you know, what happens when you do, when you train your biceps? They get bigger, right? They get bigger, they strengthen, they can take more load. It's the exact same thing with the brain. The more that you use it, the stronger it gets, and it actually grows over time. If you do specific mental brain exercises, your brain grows. And if you stop doing things to help it grow, it atrophies.
So use it or lose it, basically.
100%. Look, you're a personal trainer, correct?
Yeah.
How many clients do you see on a daily basis, do you think?
Let's just say 10.
10 on a daily basis. How many, a percentage of 10, how many come to you with an issue and they think it's a body issue or a fitness issue, but it's really starting with their mindset?
I would say, yeah, a relatively high percentage of them, yep.
How do you get around that? I'm always interested to know how PTs, because when you're a personal trainer and you're in the fitness space, you're not just a personal trainer. You're everything. You're a psychologist, you're a PT, you're a physiotherapist. How do you get around that?
Look, what I've found works really well for me is, one, obviously the education side of it needs to be huge, because if I've got a client who comes to me and, let's say, for example, obviously a very common goal in the health fitness industry is to lose fat, but their mindset may suck, their motivation may not be great, or they are just in a bad mental state because what they've tried in the past hasn't worked. But a lot of the time what they've tried in the past, they actually have no idea why they've tried it or what the actual method is that they were utilizing. So for me, it's all about educating my clients on the very basics of fat loss, the basics of strength training, nutrition, supplementation, recovery, all that stuff in between, so that the process in their mind is a lot more simplified and broken down. So it's so easy with the amount of information there is in the health and fitness industry now. It's hard to sift through all the shit, basically. So if you're so confused as to what's working, what's not working, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, I find it's very hard to be in a positive, have a positive mindset, or go into a health and fitness goal feeling confident that you're going to achieve it if you don't actually know the process of getting there. I guess it's similar to what, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might be similar to what you would do with a client. So you're actually training their brain. I'm training their brain in a way of educating them. So then the physical side of things becomes just part of the process, and their mindset around it is much more confident. Their cortisol levels are lower because they're not stressed about whether or not what they're doing is going to work, because they're confident that the process they're following will work.
Is it more so of a patience game? Because I know, especially when it comes to women, and you know, they want to lose body fat and maybe they're sitting at around 30% and they want to go down to 23% and they want it done within, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. It's more of a patience game, isn't it?
100%. And I actually sent out an email to my email list the other day. And the subject of the email was the word that nobody wants to hear, and that is time.
You know, sustainable and long-lasting results take time. And because there are so many different approaches to nutrition training, and there's always that, you know, quote-unquote next best thing, people are just looking for quick fixes. But in the end of the day, there is no quick fix. And any time that you have drastic changes or drastic results, then they're not going to last. So I spend a lot of my time, I guess, trying to, like I said, educate the client or even anyone that follows any of my stuff on social media or is on my email list, educating them on the process and getting them to understand that it does take time. And that once I can change a client's mindset from getting results as fast as possible to switching it over to actually enjoying the process and understanding that it will take time. And in fact, most of the time, the longer it takes, the better results are going to be. So for example, fat loss, the quicker you lose fat, obviously the more extreme your nutritional approach is going to be, the likelihood of losing more muscle mass is a lot higher. And the likelihood of actually sticking to it is very low because the process of getting there is going to suck. There's really no two ways about it. Whereas if I can teach someone to do it in an approach that's actually flexible and more sustainable, then one, it's going to be a lot more enjoyable. And two, it's going to, the likelihood of that lasting is a lot higher because they don't feel, it doesn't suck as much. The process doesn't suck as much.
Mm. You know what I'm really interested in when it comes to nutrition, nutrition's everything. And we look at that at, you know, with what we do, because obviously whatever you're ingesting, it's going into, you know, it's feeding your brain. Your brain's very selfish. It consumes a lot of calories. It actually consumes 30% of all the calories that you ingest. Your brain is very selfish. So there's this thing called brain inflammation. Now, it's a really, you know, common thing to look at because it's, you know, when we get inflamed in our knee, for example, the symptoms that present is swollen, you know, you get swollen or it's puffy or it's sore. Whereas when we have brain inflammation, the symptoms of brain inflammation are anger, frustration, sadness, depression. And we don't look at that. We don't look at things and say, we get frustrated or depressed and we don't think it's our brain. So I love looking at nutrition, and something that I've become really, really fascinated in is the ketogenic diet. Now, I don't know where you stand on that, but as a cognitive health perspective, I love it. I think it's great. I think if you can become a fat burning machine, then the ketogenic lifestyle when cycled is really good. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I'd love to pick your brain on fat versus carbohydrates.
Yeah, I think, look, in my opinion, I think the cognitive benefits of the higher fat diet, there is a lot of evidence there. And I think it's, you know, I think there are a lot of benefits there, and the people that are actually, so the thing, my opinion with ketogenic diet is this. So if you're someone who can actually 100% follow the ketogenic diet in the manner that it's actually meant to be followed, to the point where you're seeing the benefits of a ketogenic diet and not just a high fat diet that you follow 80% of the time, and call it ketogenic diet because it isn't. The benefits of following that are huge. And if you, in your mind or your lifestyle, you know that you can stick to a ketogenic diet to see the actual benefits, then I'm all for it. The problem that I see a lot of the time with I guess the general public or people that are just, I guess, trying their hand at a different number of nutritional approaches is that no one ever really gives it enough time to see the proper benefits. Or like I said, they're not actually following it for long enough to see the true benefits. So what I always say with people that I work with is that you need to find a way of eating. Now, whether that is high fat and very low carbohydrate, whether that is higher carbs and lower fats or whatever it may be, whether it's vegan, vegetarian, paleo, whatever it is, if you know that you can stick to it for the rest of your life and it's going to fit in with your lifestyle, then that's the approach that you need to follow. Because a lot of the time, even, you know, a saying that I say a lot is that the most optimal approach for nutrition, for training, whatever it may be, is not the most optimal approach if you can't stick to it. So, I don't know. There's a lot of evidence to show that the higher fat in terms of cognitive function and stuff is highly beneficial. And I'm sure you've looked into a lot of that yourself.
It's the thing that I get really stuck on is in the fitness world, it's you know, eating oats with your water, with your protein powder is the way to go first thing in the morning. And then you've got the, you know, the biohackers and the neurohackers that hate grains and hate oats. And it's like, I'm torn between two worlds here.
Oh, 100%. And that is, that is the health and fitness industry in a nutshell. There's pros and cons to every single approach, and there's an argument for every single approach. But in the end of the day, like I said, it really does come down to what you as an individual can stick to for the rest of your life for an extended period of time. And now, obviously, there's certain periods where, and this is probably more so for the professional athlete or someone that's highly driven, that there may be periods where you do need to stick to an approach that isn't sustainable for what a specific goal, a given goal. But for the general public, I think if you know you can stick to it, then that's the way to go. But there are a lot of benefits, yeah, as you mentioned, to the higher fat intake. And there's even, you know, like it doesn't even necessarily need to be ketogenic. So, you know, I've had clients who, so I'm very big on following macros and flexible dieting. So I've had clients who do find that their most productive part of the day is the morning. So we'll try and structure their macro breakdown for the day that their first couple of meals of the day are predominantly protein and fats, and their carbohydrate intake is a lot lower, and they'll take in most of their carbs later in the day because they find that their productivity, their mental clarity, their ability to focus is a lot higher with the fats and protein with minimal carbs early in the day. So, you know, I guess everyone's different, but it's just a matter of finding what works for you and sticking with that.
Mm. And then, you know, there's that debate, and then you've got the whole stay away from cardio. No, do increase cardio. No, you know, increase weights. You know, girls have got to do heavy weights. And it's just like, what are you meant to do? I wish, you know, in a perfect world, I wish I could just have my own personal trainer, my own chef just with me 24/7. Then I wouldn't have to think about anything.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah, well, actually, I was recording a podcast earlier, and the guest and I, we were talking about similar thing, like that there is so much out there that it's hard not to get caught in the trap of doing what you think you should be doing. And there's a big difference between doing what you think you should be doing or what's seen to be the best thing at the current time or what's popular, and actually doing what feels right for you. So I've got clients who absolutely love cardio and don't enjoy weights as much. So most of their energy expenditure does come from the cardio, but there's other clients where they've found that in the end of the day, energy expenditure is energy expenditure. If you're burning calories from lifting weights or burning calories from doing cardio, you're still burning calories. So, you know, I've got clients that are doing pretty much no cardio apart from some general aerobic fitness stuff just to maintain heart health, which they're getting from the strength training anyway, if it's at a high enough intensity. So again, like it all comes back to the same thing. What works for you, what you enjoy most, and what you're going to stick to is what's going to be the most optimal approach for you, I think.
Oh, I'm so happy you said that because I love my cardio.
Yeah, and that's fine. That is absolutely fine. Like everyone's got their opinion, and, you know, I have my opinion on what I think is most effective. But again, it just comes back to if it's not going to be effective for you, then it's pointless.
Yeah.
I'm massive.
Now, someone I interviewed on the podcast, which I think it relates heavily to both the brain, mindset, and fitness and overall health, I interviewed a sleep doctor. Now, it's so interesting to note the differences in sleep, because sleep, you know, we now know how important it is. You can't, you know, gone are the days where you can get by with 5 hours worth of sleep and be completely productive. But what I found interesting was that the fact that it doesn't matter about quantity. It doesn't matter if you're sleeping 8 hours a night, 10 hours a night, 7 hours a night. It's more about the quality of sleep. And, you know, he suggests that you sleep, the best time to sleep for your body is, you know, with the circadian rhythm is between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. And if we get in those, you know, that 4 hours of golden prime time sleep, where we're releasing a lot of melatonin, then it's going to help us actually lose weight. That's so interesting. Do you go into that with your clients?
Look, I, to be perfectly honest, haven't gone into that much detail. I'd love to have a listen to that episode actually and hear what they had to say. That sounds really interesting. I'm, you know, I am probably not the best in terms of how much sleep I get. I'm definitely not, because, you know, I'm up early in the morning. At nighttime, I struggle when I get home to just, you know, eat, shower and just go to sleep. I tend to do some emails and stuff and definitely don't get enough sleep. But I think the quality of sleep that I do get is really good. And that's something that I'm really adamant with a lot of my clients, is that you need to be focusing on quality sleep. Now, whether that means before bed you don't use your electronics for a while, or whether that means on your phone you put your, you know, the night, whatever the night version, whatever it is, where it changes the color of the screen. I've been playing around with using blue light blocking glasses lately when I am using my phone or watching TV or whatever it may be. You know, having a cold shower before bed, all these different things, using melatonin, whatever it may be, to try and get that high quality sleep, because it does make such a difference, not only to your recovery, but even to your cortisol levels, making sure that your stress is lower, making sure that you're getting that time to recover and train well the next day or whatever it may be that you're doing. Sleep is so important. And like I said, I can be much better at it myself, but the importance that I put on it for my clients is huge.
Mm. Do you place importance on hydration and drinking water?
Oh, so much. You know, there's formulas and stuff you can do to basically give you a number that you should be aiming for. But everyone that I talk to, regardless of whether I'm talking to, you know, the average Joe that comes to the gym or an Olympic athlete or professional athlete, it's always, for me, the advice is always drink more than what you're currently drinking now. Because I've had people that are professional athletes and they have been for, you know, a long time, and something as simple as drinking more water has completely changed the way that they've felt throughout the day, their mood levels, their energy levels, their recovery, their performance. It's unbelievable how much of a difference it does make whether you are hydrated or dehydrated.
Mm, I love that. I always try and drink at least 3 liters a day, and that's also brain health and hydration and body health as well.
100%. Now, there's a question that I wanted to ask you actually, is in regards to going back to the brain side of things. So is there something that we are doing in general each day, or something that's having an impact on our ability to use our brain? Is there, you know, whether it be too much screen time, whether it be, I don't know, is there something that you see that's common that we do from day to day that is having a negative effect on our cognitive ability?
100%. I'm so glad you asked that. Now, I can give you right now probably about 100 different things that we're all doing on a daily basis that's resulting in what we call cognitive decline. But if I can pinpoint one thing that almost everybody is doing, it is checking their phones the moment they wake up. Now, listen to this. Your brain operates at 10.5 wave cycles per second for the first 20 minutes upon waking up in the morning. Now, what does that mean? It means that, see, we're usually operating at around 24, but we're operating at 10.5 first thing in the morning. Now, this means that we are very susceptible within the first 20 minutes. Whatever we take in the first 20 minutes of every morning, we take that in and it primes your brain for the rest of the day. Now, if you're waking up and the first thing that you check is Instagram, immediately you have told your brain, first of all, you haven't given yourself the energy, you've given somebody else the energy. Now, if you look at Instagram and you see something you don't like, your brain immediately registers it as a threat. Now, you would know with cortisol, your brain registers danger all the same. So if we've got a lion running after us, or if we see something negative on Instagram, it registers it the same thing. It doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know the severity. It just says danger. Let's increase cortisol level. Let's start to shut down the body and just keep pumping blood through. Now, if this happens,
is that kind of like fight or flight?
Fight or flight gets switched on. Now, if this happens first thing in the morning, your body is already in fight mode. Your body's ready to kill people first thing in the morning. Okay. And this is without even leaving your bed. So that's the first thing that we do that's really resulting in poor cognitive health. The second thing I would say that we're doing above, you know, eating right and sleeping and, you know, all the main things, it would be negativity. Okay. Now you've heard of neuroplasticity. It's the brain's ability to change itself. So you can change, your brain is like plastic. Okay. You can change it and rewire it, and you rewire it via thoughts. Now, if you're having negative thoughts on a daily basis, you keep telling your brain that you're unhappy and that, you know, there's negative things happen. So it basically, your brain just registers. It stays fixated on negativity. Now, if your brain is, you know, 80% of it is negative, it sees other things as negative. So I think that's where it starts. And I know we see things, you know, posts on Instagram about being positive and, you know, get rid of the negative thoughts, but I don't think we really understand what it's doing to our health. Every time you have a negative thought, you are creating a new neural pattern, which is resulting in a new pathway, if you will, in your brain, which is then, it's changing the structure of your brain. Just like food changes the structure of our DNA, we can change the structure of our brain with a negative thought. So I think if I had to pinpoint two things, it would be negative thoughts and checking your phone first thing in the morning. That's really resulting in poor brain health.
So for someone listening now that has just heard that, and you know, they may be someone that does check their Instagram, and I think probably, let's be honest, most people are in that boat of waking up and either checking emails or checking Instagram, Facebook, whatever it may be. So my current routine, for example, is that I'm trying to not check my phone when I wake up. I do find it hard because I'm the type of person that if I see I've got emails that are there, like I tend to look at them or whatever it may be. So my current routine at the moment, I'll wake up, I'll usually have a glass of water, then I'll do 5 to 10 minutes of meditation. I'll write down my daily goals, have a coffee, have breakfast, and then, you know, I might do some emails and go to work. What could I improve there? Or what is a morning routine or something that people can implement as of right now after listening to this episode in their morning routine to make sure that they are starting their day in the best way possible?
Great. Once you wake up, this is my morning routine, and this is a routine I get all of my athletes on, and it's a non-negotiable. Morning routines in our programming are non-negotiables. Wake up, and the first thing that you want to do is meditate. Now, meditation it can come in all forms. We practice TM or Vedic meditation, which is literally you want to sit there, have nothing obstructing your neck, and you want to sit there for at least 12 to 20 minutes. Now, the more experienced you are, I would say 20 minutes. But if you're not experienced in meditation, I would say sit there for 12 minutes and meditate. And once you finish meditating, go through what I like to do is a visualization process. Now, there's this theory in neuroscience that suggests that your brain doesn't know the difference between what is real and what is not. Now, if you can access the area of your brain that's responsible for this, which can be done through meditation and through visualization, you basically trick your brain into thinking that something is real. This is why we visualize. Now, I get all of my athletes to visualize their end goal. Only spend 5 minutes doing this, 4 to 5 minutes, just really sitting there deeply, visualizing yourself in 10 years, in 20 years, in 30 years. Like, what is your end goal? You sit there on it and you visualize it. You see it in your head, and you can't just think about it. For visualization to work, you have to involve all the senses. You have to involve smell. You have to involve touch. You have to think about what you look like. What's the surroundings around you? Really visualize it. So when you open up your eyes, you feel like you are actually there in that space. So, and then finish it off with what I like to say, it's box breathing. So it's just a form of breathing where you inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. Now that there, those three things, if you can do that day in and day out for a month, I guarantee you will change your mindset. You will change your energy levels. You will change the way you think about things. Your productivity will go through the roof, and don't check your phone for the first hour of every day.
Awesome. Love that. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I actually very much like that routine. And I think I really do think that if you can get on board with some sort of morning routine, even if it's not, you know, in that exact order, or if it's not exactly those things, you will be on the path to a much better day.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Now, with neuroathletics, when did that start? And I'm going to add a question to that. And that question is, what are most athletes that you work with, what is holding them back?
Good question. So, you know, what's holding them back? There's some, you know, it's easy for me to get an athlete that has a challenge. You know, I've got a lot of athletes. I've got ones who have suffered multiple concussions. I've got ones who are suffering from, you know, they're getting poor sleep, or they've got anger management issues, and then I get ones who are actually pristine and who are at the top of their game. Some of the NBA players who are absolutely amazing, and they just come to me just to be better. And that's the hardest thing. It's like, you know, it's like if someone came to you with an apps and they were, you know, the peak at their fitness and health, and they said to you, I still want to be better. So, you know, we get a myriad of different issues. I've got somebody with OCD, a professional boxer, and she's very open about that. We get anything that you can think of when it's, you know, depression, brain health. And look, then there's a lot of people who come for anxiety. That's a really big one. We've got mild forms of anxiety, and then we've got really, you know, severe, you know, anxiety issues. And it's, you know, what makes it tricky is when you are taking into consideration the medications that they're taking. So what would happen is, once anybody, whether they're in the corporate space, whatever they're in, they come to us, we do a full 90-minute neuroperformance examination where we examine their neural output, we examine their brain waves, we do a comprehensive EEG, we test their vision. I'm really big on vision right now and its correlation to brain health. So we do a lot of eyesight and vision tests, and we take them through all that. And once we get all the data, once we know how well they're performing neurologically, we then scale them on a scale of 1 to 10. And, you know, a lot of them, for about 20 different tasks, maybe they're receiving 3 out of 10, 10 out of 10. Their focus and capacity and attention span may be really low. So then we work out a way to work on that. So yeah, there, you know, focus would be another one. A lot of people come to me and they're like, you know, I lose focus. I can't focus. And yeah, I love working on focus. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely does. And then just taking a step further back, I'm sorry. I should have asked this in separate questions, but with neuroathletics, when did this all come about and how did it come about?
Yeah, I was a triathlete for Australia. So I was training and, you know, I was training to be an Olympian. And then on the road to Beijing, I made it to Beijing, which was really, really positive. Something I'd been working so hard for, training full time as an athlete. And 3 weeks before going to Beijing, I got hit by a car and I had to forfeit my place. And that was back in 2011, 2010, I think. And when I got hit by a car, it changed my entire life. I became really obsessed with my own mindset and I started hacking my own brain. I started thinking of ways that I could go to the World Championship Series and overcome my injuries and overcome my surgeries in a different way other than just, you know, training. So I became obsessed with the brain. I became obsessed with knowledge. I went to university and studied an undergraduate degree in sports science. And then I went on to get my master's degree in mathematics. And it was then that I really delved into neurology, neuroscience. I learned about the algorithms behind brain waves. And I started working with athletes from then. And I've been now for 5 years, I've worked with some of the best athletes in the world, some of the best CEOs, Fortune 500 companies. I now have my lab, my performance lab in Manhattan in Tribeca, which houses all of my equipment, all of my neurotechnology. And yeah, I've just been attacking it 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's all I do. Just brain, brain, brain. How can I improve how can I elevate human performance? How can I make somebody better by working on their brain?
That's awesome. And for my listeners of my podcast, you're actually from Sydney, are you?
Correct. Newcastle, actually.
Fellow Newcastle. Aussie. Fellow Aussie. Yeah. And how long have you been over in New York for?
Look, on and off for a year, but now consistently for 4 months.
Awesome. Now, I've got a couple more questions on my end before we wrap things up. I don't know if there's anything else that you were wanting to ask on your end.
Yeah.
So the first one of that is nutrition, and I guess more so supplementation. Now, I know when we had a chat last week, we kind of briefly touched on this, but I've been looking a lot into like nootropics and stuff like that. Is there certain supplements that you would recommend that are going to help in enhance our cognitive ability that we can add into our daily routine, or is that something that you don't really touch on?
Yeah, no, I definitely touch on that. It forms one of the key components of our training methodologies and what we do. Now, here's the interesting thing: when it comes to nootropics, there's so many things to take into consideration, and one is there is no point in even taking any type of supplement if you haven't got a good diet happening. You know, and you would know that. I mean, I'm sure you don't. Tell your clients, well, I actually don't know. Do you advise supplementation for your clients even if they don't have a healthy diet already?
No, you just hit the nail on the head. So I'm really big on getting the point across that supplements are purely there, as the word would suggest, to supplement your diet, supplement your yes. nutritional habits to work alongside what your current goal is. So if your training and your nutrition is not on point, and supplements aren't going to do a thing for you.
That's exactly how I feel. And the biggest thing I want to stress is nootropics are fantastic, and they can enhance your brain and your cognitive function, and they can really diminish brain fog, which is the number one reason why people do take nootropics in the first place. I would definitely suggest cleaning up your diet first, getting the right amount of sleep and hydration, and then looking at some nootropics. And when you do, the next thing you really need to look at is the quality, because there is a lot of shit happening right now. I'm seeing a lot of it come out of Sweden. I'm seeing some good things coming out of Australia, but the leaders are right now in California, and I've been fortunate enough to be associated with some great brands. So the second thing I would look at when looking for a nootropic would be the quality of the supplement. Now, in terms of which ones to take, there are some. You know, I take about 20 different pills a day.
Right.
Pills. Vitamins, nootropics, and that's because the space I'm in, I'm always trying new things and hacking new things. But a really big one that I'm onto is L-tyrosine. I'm spreading the love for L-tyrosine. Absolutely love it. And you can pick some up. The best brand I've come across is Bulletproof by Dave Asprey. There's some other ones out there, but L-tyrosine would be a really great one to start with.
Which has what effect?
So L-tyrosine really helps you when it comes to, I won't even get into the neurotransmitters and how it helps in that sense, but I will say that it really helps with clarity. You know, when you first wake up in the morning, you have it first thing in the morning. You know, when you wake up and sometimes you've got a foggy brain, you're kind of like, it's like, yeah, I've had 8 hours sleep and I'm still feeling a bit gluggy, and it really helps you get rid of that. And it gives you I can't explain it other than it just gives you clarity and clear of mind. It feels like it enhances your energy levels cognitively. So you're able to see better, you're able to think faster, and it just really energizes your brain. It feeds your brain. And I always recommend that. That's the number one thing I recommend. Then there's some other basic ones like zinc and copper. It's always a staple of mine. There's some staples that you can be taking. And then you can start going into, if you want to be really specific, here in America, a lot of people are taking prescription drugs to enhance their abilities. And I wouldn't suggest that for anybody, but yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. And then lastly, before this will be my last question anyways, what can the listener start doing as of right now, similar to the morning routine? Is there anything else that we can be doing today to enhance our brain's function aside from the meditation and the way we start our day? And obviously aside from the nutrition, hydration and sleep, which I guess probably covers most of the main things anyway.
No, look, what I've just given you is baseline measurement. It's baseline things that we should all be doing no matter what age we are. But if we want to get really specific, okay, because that's all mindset stuff I've just given you. That's if we want to get specific and grow this hunk of meat that's sitting inside our skull that we call a brain. We really want to do things like if you go on and look on either my YouTube or my Instagram page, you'll see me with two balls just hitting them up against the wall, training my reaction time. Now, things like this where you're training both the left and right hemispheres of your brain, you're getting your vision, you're training your vision, you're increasing your BDNF, which is your brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a hormone release when you exercise. And if you're doing all this at the one time, your brain is under so much pressure, you're training it, and that's how it's going to grow. So if I can suggest anything, it would be doing little things like balancing on one leg and throwing a ball, or doing mathematical equations with your eyes closed, or spelling names, thinking of the capital of countries and then spelling their names backwards. Anything that's going to challenge you, like a really good one that we give some of our corporate employees is when you wake up in the morning, write down your goals using your non-dominant hand, because it really makes your brain think, and it's so hard. So doing things that's going to challenge you like that is going to be definitely beneficial for your brain.
I love that. That's great. And that's definitely stuff that can be implemented straight away.
Yeah. I before we finish off, I've got some questions I want to ask you. That's more related to, you and how you find the space that you're in. And with fitness being such a growing market, especially with the amount of people wanting to become fitness trainers, what do you see as the biggest challenge or biggest problem within the fitness industry in Australia? Because I know there's a big difference between the Australian fitness industry and the American one. So let's stick to the Australian fitness industry.
Yeah, for sure. And this will be kind of aimed more towards Australia, but I think there are definitely some big similarities. So the first thing I think, especially in terms of becoming a fitness trainer, is the fact that it is too easy now. It is way too easy and too quick to become a fitness trainer and be qualified to basically either improve or have a very negative effect on someone's life in regards to controlling their training and whether it may be their food or and even giving out supplement recommendations and stuff like that. But the fact that the courses are so quick and you can be qualified to be a trainer now without having to do a great deal of training yourself, I think is not a great thing. I think it should take longer. Like, all great things take time. So if you're able to become a qualified trainer from absolute scratch in, less than a couple of months now, I think it is, which is just crazy. I don't see that as a good thing. And the other thing I think is there's just a lot out there now, which is purely out there to make money. There's more people in the fitness industry now that are business minded or that have that business mindset compared to having a mindset of actually helping people and implementing training and nutrition methods that are going to benefit people in the long term, because they're more focused on what is going to be the next big thing, what's going to sell the most, what's going to be able to make the most money. And that's never a good thing. So, the example of what I do, obviously everybody wants to make money. I think if someone says they don't want money, then they're lying to you. But my biggest factor is that all the stuff that I do, and I do put a lot of time into, whether it be marketing and business and all that type of stuff, but in the end of the day, I'm a trainer. So my main focus is always trying to learn new things, to upskill myself and provide the best content and knowledge that I can to my clients or whoever's listening or watching. So that it's actually going to help people. I genuinely want to help people. And the byproduct of that, if you are helping people and getting results, in the end of the day, you will make money. If you're listening to this and you are a trainer or whatever, then your main goal should always be to help someone and have a positive impact on whatever their end result may be. So I guess I've rambled on a bit there, but the two main things I would say that aren't great at the moment would definitely be, one, the fact that there are a lot of people out there that are just giving information that's just secondhand information that they've heard somewhere else, and giving that out to people that are taking it on board and actually implementing it without any real evidence or anything backing it up. And the second part would be that there's just a lot out there now which is just shit, and it's just money making programs and supplements and nutritional products. So that'd be the two things at the moment in my eyes.
I love that. I completely agree with you with the whole, it's losing its main focus, which is helping people. Because what I'm seeing now, especially coming out of Australia, and I have to put it out there, is these girls who are born very thin and very lean, and they're putting up that, you know, try my 30-day challenge and this and that. I'm like, how can that ever work for a woman who was not born thin, was not born with the same metabolic advantage of you? And I'm baffled as to how a 20 year old fresh out of high school, who's never had to go through any struggles when it comes to body image and body weight, how they can help a 40 year old ethnic woman who's had 3 kids.
Yeah. Oh, easy answer.
Is that a bad thing? Because it's, I don't want to put anyone down, and of course everyone's out there, you know, doing their own thing. I get that, but it just really does, you know, that is what frustrates me about the fitness industry. And I'm telling you, I'm not seeing it as much in America. American fitness industry has their own challenges. Yes. But what I'm seeing a lot of in Australia is it's 20 year old Instagram models who are preaching, follow my 30 day challenge or my 6 week challenge to get lean and lose weight. And I'm thinking, but it's like a 10 year old, saying, join my maths community and I'll teach the maths professors how to do maths.
Yeah. Look, unfortunately there's a lot of that out there, and it all comes down to that one thing again. Quick fixes don't last and they won't work. There is no such thing as a quick fix. As I said before, all great things take time. You never look at someone who's at the top of their field or someone that is successful or someone that is constantly fit and healthy year round, and the answer or the way they got there was never a short-term quick fix. It was always extended period of time doing the small things well, consistently well, day in, day out, educating themselves and following an approach that's actually sustainable over time to see those results. So as I mentioned, it kind of comes back to that whole money-making thing, and it is frustrating, but look, I think there are so many good aspects of social media, you know, and technology, obviously, like this, for example. We're recording a podcast and hopefully helping a heap of people, which is amazing. But with social media not going anywhere, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, there is negatives to it. And that, you know, one of those is the fact that a lot of people, especially younger people, are impressionable by people they look up to. So, yeah, there's not much you can do about it, unfortunately. But hopefully chats like we're having today are able to reach more people and have more of an impact.
Love that. Now I'm going to finish off with one question that I ask everybody, and that is, if somebody wants to immediately improve their human performance, what is the number one advice that you could give them now to implement today?
Probably comes in two parts. Mm. Part one is actually getting clear with what your goal is. So often I'll have someone come to me and say they want to build muscle and lose fat at the same time. Now, unless you're starting out complete newbie, or you're extremely overweight, or you're using some form of performance enhancing drugs, you're not going to build a lot of muscle and lose a lot of fat at the same time. It's just not going to happen. So getting clear on your goal and actually being specific and not just saying I want to lose weight or I want to lose muscle. It needs to be, I want to lose 4 kilograms of fat, or you know, I'm not sure what the conversion is into pounds, in 8 weeks' time, whatever it may be. You need to be very specific with what your goal is and actually come up with a plan. And the second part of that is educating yourself on that plan. So figuring out what the actual fundamentals are of fat loss in terms of nutrition, you know, energy in versus energy out, making sure that you're getting enough protein with your training, actually having some periodized or progressive aspect to your training and not just going in and just doing what you feel like on the day or what you saw on Instagram. So I guess it's probably one, getting clear with your goal, and two, actually educating yourself on how to achieve that goal and not just guessing, because, you know, eating clean, you know, quote unquote clean food and just going to the gym just isn't going to cut it. It's just a guessing game. So get a little bit more specific with what you're after, figure out how to get there, and make sure you're following those steps consistently.
I love that. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I loved it. Where can we find out more information about you?
You can visit my website, which is just www.dannykennedyfitness.com. You can come and check out some of my content on my Instagram, which is at @DJKFitness. Or you can listen to this podcast if you haven't already, which is the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. And your podcast, I believe, is called the Neuro Experience Podcast. Am I right?
This is correct, the Neuro Experience. And you can find me at The Diamond Boss on Instagram or neuroathletics.com.au. You'll find everything you need to know about brain health and brain fitness.
Amazing. And the listeners of my show, please do go and check out that content. There's a lot of value there, and I'll make sure all the links to your socials and website and whatnot are going to be in the show notes below. So thanks a lot for joining me today. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it.